Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you on this Tuesday, the 29th of March. Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Burundi's ruling party, the CNDD-FDD, accuses Rwandan President Paul Kagame of seeking to export genocide as relations between the two neighbours worsen.
Well, I think the statement follows a trend of very aggressive language towards the international community and the Rwandan government from the CNDD-FDD for the past few months.
And later today, German Development Minister Gerd Müller will be paying a visit to the Dadaab refugee camp in northeastern Kenya.
We really hope that with the visit of the German minister, he will be our ambassador in Europe and in the world to defend the cause of the Somali refugees in Dadaab.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
In Burundi, the ruling CNDD-FDD party has accused Rwandan President Paul Kagame of seeking to export genocide to his country. This strong, if not inflammatory, language is yet a further sign of the worsening relations between the two neighbours. Burundi has been in political crisis since last year, when President Pierre Nkurunziza decided to run for a controversial third term. The subsequent unrest left 400 people dead and drove 250,000 from their homes. Neighbouring Rwanda has been accused of destabilising Burundi even further by supporting Burundian rebels, a charge which Rwanda denies. But Burundi now plans to take Rwanda to court over its alleged backing for the insurgency on its territory, as the Burundian Foreign Affairs Minister Alain-Aimé Nyamitwe told DW's correspondent in Bujumbura, Apollinaire Niiora.
It is a right that any country has to go into litigation when its sovereignty is being harassed or violated. In the case of Burundi, we have evidence that suggests that indeed Rwanda as a state has violated our sovereignty and the dignity of our people. We have that right reserved. Any moment we might be, you know, forced to file a lawsuit at the ICJ simply because we believe that nations have to live in peace and harmony, simply also because we believe that both countries are members of the United Nations and have agreed to abide by the relevant instruments pertaining to peaceful coexistence. There is a number of documents, of instruments, resolutions, both of the Security Council and the General Assembly, which call member states to respect borders inherited from colonial masters and also making sure that they live in peace and harmony with others. A country that violates the borders of another sovereign state must be ready to face trial if need be.
So filing the lawsuit is just a plan, it's not yet a decision?
It is a decision which will be implemented at the opportune time. But it is, like I said, it's a right of a state. We are not doing anything that is not within the bag of our own rights. You know, we are just doing things that are in the limits of what a state can do. Contrary to others, we are not violating any borders, any sovereignty of any other country. We are just saying that if we are victims of that violation, then we need to take action. And we are taking a positive and peaceful solution to this crisis.
But do you have enough evidence that Rwanda is really destabilizing Burundi?
Otherwise, we would not even be thinking about going into litigation if we didn't have evidence. So let's leave it to the moment when we will be in court.
A couple of weeks ago, the Burundian government said it had captured a Rwandan spy, and it said it was a Rwandan soldier. But later, the government of Rwanda refuted that accusation.
It's quite funny. How many activities have they carried in Burundi that they have admitted to doing? Did you expect really that they would say this is our soldier? It is a fact all over the world that spies are always been, you know, subject of denial by their own countries. So we're not going into that debate. really. You know, otherwise we have to read the pages of history. But suffice it to say that we have evidence, and we are not the only ones, by the way. You know, the United Nations, a group of experts, has collected a number of facts, and the report, the full report, is will be released, I believe, in the month of June, suggesting that Rwanda has indeed facilitated acts aiming at destabilizing our country, Burundi, with the main goal of overthrowing President Pierre Nkurunziza and the government.
That was Burundi's Foreign Affairs Minister, Alain-Aimé Niyomitwe, talking to Apollinaire Niyiora. Let's try and put those remarks into perspective, keeping in mind those allegations made by the head of the CNDD-FDD, Pascal Nyabenda, that Rwanda was seeking to export genocide to Burundi. He said that President Kagame was responsible for recruiting and training young Burundians in refugee camps so they could return to Burundi and commit acts of genocide. My colleague Isaac Mugabe asked Yolanda Bucher, a researcher on Burundi, what she made of these claims.
Well, I think the statement follows a trend of very aggressive language towards the international community and the Rwandan government from the CNDD-FDD for the past few months. I think one of the most concerning aspects of this rhetoric is the fact that it comes from the ruling party, but from an individual who also has a prominent place in government. Mr. Nyabenda is also the president of the National Assembly, which makes him not only a representative of the CNDD-FDD, but a high-ranking official at the legislative.
Now, if I may further quote him, he said the genocide laboratory is in Rwanda because President Kagame, having experimented there, wants to export it to Burundi to play a minor imperialist. Is there any justification for this kind of allegation? Yet we know that Rwanda is now home to thousands of Burundian refugees.
Well, the relationships between the CNDD-FDD and the ruling party in Rwanda have deteriorated over the past few months. However, I think we need to be very careful when we read this language. I think most importantly, the language is revisionist. It's accusing President Kagame of having organized the genocide in Rwanda, which we know is not true. It's been documented through various court proceedings domestically in Rwanda and internationally in Arusha and other countries in the world. I think there's also a sense of the tensions between the two countries, but also the reality that President Kagame has been perceived by some of his neighbors as someone who meddles sometimes in the internal affairs of some countries. The best example is the support of some armed groups and in the DRC by the RPF in Rwanda. So that there's no denying that the Rwandan government does not have a good reputation with regards to respect of sovereignty of other neighbors. That being said, I think the language used by the CNDD-FDD is completely unwarranted, particularly given the fact that the genocide itself in Rwanda is a topic that is very controversial with regards to number of allegations of the genocide denial by various members of society.
As someone who has extensively researched on Burundi and had a chance of visiting the country, where do you see this ending in the long run? I mean, the cold relations between these two sister countries, Rwanda and Burundi.
I think the trajectory of the relations between the two countries will be dependent on, one, the potential of de-escalation of violence in Burundi, and that has a lot to do with the type of leadership that we will see come out of the East African Community and the African Union with regards to mediating the situation and to finding a political solution to the conflict. There's been a loss of momentum since last January, and that's unfortunate because the longer the crisis lasts, the more dangerous the situation becomes in Burundi and for the region as a whole.
Yolanda Boka.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
A court in Angola has sentenced 17 youth activists, including a well-known rapper, to between 2 and 8 years in jail for planning a rebellion against President Dos Santos. The sentence was handed down at the end of a lengthy trial in Luanda, which the Angolan opposition said proves the existence of ingrained political repression in the country. Rapper Luerte Berro, who went on hunger strike for over a month last year in protest at his detention, received a 5.5-year sentence. Christina Kripal reports.
The harshest sentence, 8.5 years, was handed down to journalist Domingos da Cruz, author of one of the books that was being debated by the young people at the time of their arrest in June of last year. The book is called Tools to Destroy a Dictator and to Avoid a New Dictatorship. Da Cruz was considered to be the leader of a criminal association all the accused supposedly belonged to. Outside the court, activist Pedrovski Teka said he was outraged by the outcome of the trial.
This court just executed the orders of President Dos Santos and the ruling MPLA. This is a shame for our judicial system. As an activist and companion of one of the accused women, I will tell you that this is one of the worst mistakes that the regime and the party are making.
The young activists deny all the accusations. They told the court that they only debated politics at their weekly meetings and not once contemplated overturning the government or any other violent action. Ana Monteiro of Amnesty International in Portugal condemns the whole process.
Obviously, Amnesty International believes there should never have been a trial, much less a sentencing. The process was highly irregular. This is a very sad day for the freedom of expression and association.
While in prison, the young men were subjected to abuse, including violence. During their 9 months in custody, one of the activists tried to commit suicide. In protest against their unlawfully long detention, 8 of them went on a hunger strike. Portuguese Angolan rapper Luati Beirão was one of them. He refused food for a total of 36 days, one day for every year President Eduardo dos Santos has been in power. This drew the attention of the world and probably helped to secure the release of the defendants into house arrest in mid-December. There were demonstrations on the streets of European capitals. Rights group Amnesty International collected over 38,000 signatures in protest against the detention. Ana Monteiro of that organization told DW,
Angola wants to be an important player in the region, but it needs to understand that this is only possible if the government respects human rights.
Lately, protest rallies staged by critics and the opposition in the capital, Luanda, and in other big cities have been brutally dispersed by the police. There have also been several other arbitrary arrests of activists and journalists.
Christine Kapal reporting.
Africa on the move.
The Kenyan economy has a large informal sector, so there must be a reservoir of talent, expertise and untapped resources out there. That thought occurred to Kenyan entrepreneur Catherine Gashunga while she was looking for someone to do some home repairs. This was the beginning of a new business model. This report for Africa on the Move by Dominic Eisenhardt-Water is presented now by Eunice Wanjuru.
In Kenya, getting hold of a good plumber when the kitchen sink is blocked isn't easy. It is not as if there aren't any good plumbers around. It's just a question of finding one. It's a problem with which Catherine Gashunga is very familiar, and it gave her an idea.
Every time I ask my neighbour, you have to ask your neighbour how for a house help, for a plumber, for an electrician. And I realised that the people would come, do a bad job. So I kept going through this phase. And I realized, why not just go out there? There are people there who are very skilled. They don't have the internet. And I could bring them onto the internet space and give them, improve their skills. They could get more work.
And so Catherine decided to found a dedicated online platform called the Red Ant Directory, which links up reliable craftsmen offering traditional skills and services with those who need them in this age of the internet and the mobile phone.
I realize there's a gap. There's a forgotten group of people that do not have an Android phone or a smartphone, and they don't have internet, but they have good services to offer. I call them my forgotten people, because everybody is developing mobile money apps, everything, but nobody is doing something for the Juakali sector.
Juakali is the term for informal workers. It actually means hot sun in Swahili, as many of them are forced to work in the open air exposed to the elements. The Kenyan economy has a huge informal sector. 3 out of 4 workers are dependent on it. And like the formal sector, there is no state regulation or protection. So the prospect of fair pay for good workmanship in the informal sector through platforms such as Red Ant is generating a lot of interest. Kenyan economist Ali Khan Sachu believes these sites could revolutionize Kenya's informal sector.
This is the beginning of innovation. I mean, what we have is what I would call an information asymmetry. What do I mean by that? I mean, majority of Juakali workers are not connected. The act of connecting makes things more efficient, makes things more transparent, and will create more jobs for everybody. This is a great example of what can be done, and we'll see many innovations like this, which will dramatically change the way the Juakali sector works.
For now, the changes are fairly basic. To join Red Ant, an informal worker pays a $2 registration fee and 50 cents a month thereafter. Red Ant vets applicants by getting in touch with a third party in the neighborhood.
We are using agents. So if it's a house help, we look for an agent, a shopkeeper in that village who knows where this girl is coming from. So when they are registering them, you can see the picture, you can see the ID number of that house help, and you can see if they are verified or not.
Catherine now has 300 informal workers in her directory.
And that report was written by Dominic von Eisenhardt-Walter. Later today, Germany's Development Minister Gerd Müller will be visiting the Dadaab refugee camp in northeastern Kenya to assess the standard of humanitarian aid being provided there by aid agencies. The minister will be meeting, among others, officials from the UN refugee agency UNHCR. Isaac Mugabe asked Ahmed Fall, head of UNHCR operations in Dadaab, how Germany was supporting his organization.
Germany is one of our biggest donors. They contribute directly to our program in funding our operations. And not earmarked funds for the refugee program. And also they contribute, they fund WFP also for the, on the food. Last year there was a food cut of 30% of the ration because of lack of funding. And I think in the beginning of this year, we received a big amount of money. WFP received, if I'm not mistaken, about $24 million from Germany. That money allowed WFP to cover a full ration for all the refugees who have family size 1, 2, and 3. Those family size are receiving full ration, not 70%, full ration, because of the contribution we received at the beginning of this year from Germany, which is very important for us. Apart from contributing individually as a country in this program, Germany also contributes through the EU, because we receive also the EU is one of our biggest donors, and we receive a lot of contribution from the EU in our program. In other sectors, like the deradicalization program, the SPP program, which is a security partnership and project with the government, and in our general activities, water, health, livelihoods activities. So Germany is really one of our biggest donors, and we really thank Germany for that.
With Europe facing an unprecedented influx of refugees, have you noticed any growth of interest in the plight of the residents of Dadaab?
Not really. Unfortunately, Dadaab continue to be forgotten. That's why we are happy that the minister is coming. I think some 2 months or 3 months ago, we received the visit of the German ambassador. And we told them that we really need to make Europe aware of the situation in Somalia. This program is 25 years old, and we struggle to find a solution. And we need really the European help to find a solution in Somalia. We need peace in Somalia. We need people, we need the country, the international community to pay attention to Somalia so that we find a durable solution for these refugees who are here for the past 25 years. That's very important.
Ahmed Fall from the UNHCR in Dadaab in northeastern Kenya.
Making a difference.
Urban garbage collection is often regarded as a man's job because of the heavy lifting involved. But in Zimbabwe, the city of Harare, the nation's capital, has adopted a policy of equal opportunities. Women are also now being employed as refuse truck drivers and garbage collectors. Privilege Mushaniri sent us this report.
It is 6 a.m. in Warren Park, one of Harare's low-income residential areas. An all-female refuse collection team is at work in the neighborhood. Dressed in orange work suits, the women are going about the work they have come to enjoy. I took a trip with an all-female team to learn about their experiences and why they took up garbage collection of all professions offered by the city of Harare. Makanya Ragandiwa, who started as a street sweeper in 1996, is now a truck driver. She says the town clerk at the time encouraged women to take up male-dominated professions.
I love serving people through driving this truck. I encourage women to take up jobs that are mostly done by men. Working a job considered as a man's domain should not change you, even if you are married. You just have to give an equal measure of respect to your husband, even if you are working a man's job.
The physical nature of the job can be taxing. Unlike in the Western world, where waste management is highly mechanized, the city of Harare garbage collectors do a lot of lifting. One ought to be strong to meet the demands of the job. Margaret Mugore has been lifting refuse bins for 6 years.
We used to have problems, high blood pressure and tiredness because of inactivity, but I am now active. I wake up at 4 a.m. Residents receive us well. They are happy and say we do a thorough job more than our male counterparts. They say our male counterparts are always in a hurry.
Michael Chideme, who is the acting city of Harare communications manager, says female refuse collectors are becoming popular with the residents and the city is striving to increase female teams to attain gender balance.
The motherly touch that the women have in everything that they do is also enticed or enthused the customers. They make the customers happy as well. And women were also pestering that they can do the job. And it was also a form of giving them the platform to exercise their skill.
Moving around the neighborhood with the all-female refuse collectors team, you could see residents warmly receiving them. Most of those who are happy are housewives who, in the African setting, often do house chores. The women say the male refuse collection teams often harass them. Zimbabwe has made significant progress in ratifying international gender protocols in various sectors of the economy. However, those in the women's movement feel more still needs to be done, particularly in resource allocation.
And that was Privilege Mushaniri reporting from Harare. And Making a Difference returns at the same time next week. And before we leave you here on Africa Link, a reminder of the main stories that we've been covering for you over the last 25 minutes. Burundi's ruling party has accused Rwandan President Paul Kagame of seeking to export genocide as relations between the two neighbours deteriorate further. And Germany's development minister Gert Müller will visit the Dadaab refugee camp in northeastern Kenya later today to assess the humanitarian situation there. And there we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. But please remember, we welcome your comments on our programmes about what you've heard or what you'd like to hear. You can send a text message to country code 49160 957 595 10 and email to feedback.africa@dw.com. That's feedback.africa@dw.com. africalink@africalink.com or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. From me, Mark Caldwell, thank you for listening and bye now.